Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And we have dived deep into the notes on the Constitutional Convention and finally finished the Hamilton plan, or Hamilton's criticism and injection of the the monarchy light in his plan. But anyway, let me dive into, because it's Feedback Friday, the past couple of weeks I have gone through painstakingly to kind of show you how the two parties had to collude, they had to work together to, you know, what's the word for it? Incrementally increase the tyranny and their ability to ratchet up tyranny. And so there were many things that were being done. And you know what? When they took over the party with, you know, I should say, when they took over the Electoral College process and the election process of the president in 1856, was that, you know, this insidious idea? Was the plan of those who were actually doing the work to really undermine America? No. And as a matter of fact, it's just like, I honestly believe that many people that did things thinking that it was really the best thing to do, and for maybe some bad reasons, like it may have been noble, or the intent may have been, oh, well, for, it's better this way. But it always bodes, as Washington said, it is always based on the best intentions when they violate the Constitution, or when they violate the law, when government steps in and goes, well, we don't have the authority to do this, but this is the best thing we can do, and we intend to do good things with this, and this is what we're going to do. Every time, as a matter of fact, Washington pointed out that that's how governments, or I should say nations, are destroyed, by their government with good intentions, because they never undo what they did. And as a matter of fact, even when it's been bad, this I didn't even get into this, but think about this, folks. We have proven, empirical data is incredibly overwhelming, that just in the school system alone, getting rid of the Bible, getting rid of prayer, and getting rid of creation and some fundamental things, we have incrementally thrown away our morals, and we have become a nation of moral turpitude. So what are we going to say? What are we going to do? What are you going to do? And, you know, how much time do you think we have? They are literally, you know, at the ready to rush out of their strongholds, out of their positions, kind of like, you know, what we saw in the Lord of the Rings, when all of a sudden the gates of Mordor opened up, and from all these different directions where evil was hiding, they just started marching out. And as a matter of fact, I've mentioned this before. If you've never, you know, there's a lot of people that, we all have different tastes in music. I love classical music, and I love classically oriented music, but I like jazz. I like country. I'm okay with lots of different music because it's a form of expression. But a very prophetic song is Supper's Ready by Genesis. And I think it's 1969 when they did it. And it's all about the second coming of Christ. And it talks about, you know, the armies of Gog and Magog. Sorry for mixing the metaphors. Anyway, let me just dive in. You want to actually check that out. It, again, is Supper's Ready. Now, I kind of want to start off with planting the metaphor that Paul had kind of shared that points to determining whether you're really ready. Do you really understand what the problem is, so that you can engage in a real solution? Are you ready to get out of the nut house? Are you ready to leave the farm, the institution, whatever you want to call it? Are you ready to become a fighter for liberty? And I believe the metaphor he painted was the test to determine whether somebody had reached a level of sanity or not was to actually tell them to get all of the water up off of the floor in this room. And in this room, there's literally water all over the floor, and it's pouring out of the sink and the faucet's on, and it's just, you know, pouring out. And you give the guy a mop to go in and mop up the floor. And the test is whether that person walks over and turns the spigot off or not. Because if you try to actually mop up a floor that has water pouring upon it all the time, you can never fix the floor. You can never get the problem fixed. You have to stop the flow of water. Put that analogy with all of the warfare tactics that our federal government is waging on us, whether it's the invasion. As a matter of fact, I just talked to a good patriot in Iowa that just told me that they had received last night several buses, more than one, several buses of invaders being displaced up into Iowa. These aren't migrant workers, folks. These are warriors. These are people that are going to become a real threat in your neighborhood. And so what do? And I'm going to give you the analogy of what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't run to your sheriff to say, you got to stop this. And you shouldn't run to your county commissioners and say, you know, what are you going to do about this? We have a petition that clearly articulates what has to happen. Congress has to repel the invasion. When you understand the term repel, that doesn't mean just close the border. That means close the border and start sending everybody back, getting everybody rounded up. And as a matter of fact, go do the due diligence and look up the term, because it's right there in the petition. What is Operation Wetback? I mean, it was a terrible name, but it was the efforts of, I believe, from Hoover, FDR, Truman, and even Ike. And Ike was the one, I think, that had the biggest yield in removing invaders, people who came here. And I'm telling you, back in those days, it was a pretty benign invasion. I mean, these were really migrant workers that came to stay. And, you know, was trying to actually probably bring people here. Today, it's about people coming here to bypass the system and somehow get into the teat so that, and actually, this is what's happening. Government is actually bringing them in, welcoming them, and taking your tax dollars and giving them and nourishing them and trying to keep them here without assimilating. And as a matter of fact, many are here for very specific purposes, and it has nothing to do with making America great or better at all. So we're going to talk about what a constitutional president should do, and I'll get into that in a minute. But I want to get into something on a personal note, and something that I think really needs to be discussed. And I hate preaching about forgiveness, but I will tell you, I'm very, very cognizant of how important forgiveness is. As a matter of fact, anybody that's a Christian should understand that those who are unwilling to forgive those who have sinned bear the greater sin. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I believe that's the message that was given in the New Testament. Now, I myself have my personal challenges, and I myself have really toxic people that I deal with. As a matter of fact, you can't be in my position taking a stand on the Constitution and not deal with absolutely total, you know, insane toxic people. And so fortunately, I've been able to really help myself compartmentalize myself to stay away from, or I just ignore that stuff. That is noise that is really drowned out in my world. I do have, you know, there's those, you know, bat crap crazy people, whether it's your neighbor or a family member or whatever that you're dealing with. Excuse me. And I know that my patience is not what I would consider, you know, top notch. But I really do work on, and I really, you know, I can see myself, and I've actually, I catch myself maybe responding poorly. And so for anybody I work with, I hope you forgive me, but, and because I understand I'm a rigid person. I mean, I am told all the time that I'm a very rigid and possibly an intimidating person. I don't mean to intimidate, and I don't mean to put people in any position like that. So I'm hoping that if I do that to you, that you forgive me so that we can continue working together. But that being said, we have to forgive our neighbors. We have to forgive those people who have harmed us. And I see that there are patriots that are having a problem with this. So before I dive into a specific instance, let me give you an instance that is just absolutely mind-boggling and so problematic that it's worth sharing. And I don't want to actually allude to, because this is a family friend. My wife's and I's family friend. I mean, you know, they're a close person to us. And what ended up happening is this close friend, because we never knew the close friend's spouse. And so, I'm going to tell you this story. So this close friend of ours had, you know, I have no idea the quality and everything else. All we know is that their spouse cheated on them. And they felt that that was, you know, that terminated the marriage and that was it. And so, and this is a heart-wrenching story, and I'm not doing a good job at it because I just want to keep it as sterile as possible, because this is nobody's business of who this was. But what ended up happening was the spouse was so remorseful. I mean, prostrated themselves to our friend and dedicated. I mean, just continued and continued and continued to plead that they would be taken back, given another chance, be forgiven. Pleaded and pleaded and pleaded to a point where that unfaithful spouse ended up committing suicide. And so the challenges, you know, that I look at, you know, was there still time? Was this an issue where there was really nothing more to be done? Or was this an issue that was, you know, really something that should have been forgiven? I can't even step in. I can't even come close to assessing any blame or judgment. But what I will tell you is that we have, and we're looking at a time where we absolutely need to be forgiving each other. And in this particular case, what would have happened if they were able to forgive each other and, you know, and move on? So here I am trying to help you put context to this. I believe that there's some real reckoning, and this friend of ours is, you know, really a good Christian, and we're hoping that, you know, this was all kind of taken care of. But, you know, I would not want to go through the rest of my life not having that opportunity to forgive that person. And so anyway, I just want to, you know, place this all of a sudden, this places a very good context. We see these memes where, you know, you want to make sure that those loved ones and friends and so forth, in your last conversation, you had a very good conversation. And that, you know, that person knew and you knew that they loved you. Because if something happened to you, you know, I would not want anybody to be racking themselves, you know, with this, oh, I never got things straight. We never got things straight. But anyway, let me get into a very specific case, because this just actually happened. In working with a group of patriots, and I'm not going to talk about, you know, what state, where they were, or what have you, but I was working with a group of patriots, And there were really two principals out of this gang that were doing most of the work. But one of the things that was being struggled with was this gang had real contention with the party, the local Republican Party. So much so that it seemed like there was this immovable chip on their shoulders to be able to work with the people in their community because of that party, the hurt they had from what the party did to them. And so, and I'm not going to get into the details. What's really important is this possessed them. They were so entrenched, so, I guess the scar hardened them so hard that they just couldn't get beyond that. And so what ended up happening is it created a circumstance to where, you know, they weren't willing. And it actually, it's kind of caused this termination at this point. And these are really good people. They're good constitutionals that we need in the fight, but they are incapable of being a warrior because they can't stand next to another citizen because of their party affiliation. In other words, I mean, folks, we've got to get over these things that are dividing us and these contentions. I may seem guilty of being contentious with, you know, these conservative organizations, Tactical Civics, John Birch Society, and so forth and so on. I pray that we can all sit down at a table because, you know, there are fundamental doctrines that I believe are absolutely incorrect, such as the doctrine of magistrates. That should not be on the table in America. We have a Republican form of government that is basically from the bottom up. We are a bottom-up driven government. And somehow we were quick. I mean, Hamilton wanted to convert the whole republic back to a top-down strong magistrate where the president had far more. Basically, he wanted a king. And there were many people like him. They called them Anglophiles. They wanted to go back towards the monarchy. And obviously, what ended up coming out of that Constitutional Convention was something completely different than anybody could have ever fathomed. And so this is why this stuff is so important, because what we were given is nothing like what people are trying to retain today. And so every time I hear somebody cite, oh, well, Blackstone's commentary, I go, you realize that you're talking in a paradigm of a top-down magistrate doctrine. And that was the law then. We have something different. I mean, there are many similar principles, but you have to place context to the design of government. We're not subjects of the court. The court is a representation of us to actually be the guardians of the law we've created. That is their job, is to be the guardians of that law. Not the twisters and the redefiners and those who, you know, can transform our government into something that they think is better. And yet they've assumed that power. That's why we've gone through, that's why I go through this all the time. So what I want to talk about, because I got a lot of other things to talk about, I need to talk about the constitutional president. And actually, last year, I aired, I want to say 12 or 13 episodes. I may have mentioned this before. I'm going to mention this every day until the 11th of March. On the 11th of March, I am going to rebroadcast from Monday through Friday and into the next week. I will be rebroadcasting those shows so that you can hear from the beginning of one to the next to the next to the next how important it is to actually get a constitutional president. I want you to understand this. It's not about conservative. I will give you my perspective on conservative in a minute here. But I am telling you, had Trump been a constitutional president, let's just look at one aspect of his term in office. Had he used the Constitution regarding the invasion, there is no doubt in my mind that we would have actually repelled, and there would be many, I'll say, militias, or those who are in this facade called the militia, we call the National Guard, but their focus over the past 4 years plus, even to today, he could have put in motion the repelling of this invasion. And how could he have done that? He could have actually gone to Congress and said, hey, Congress, you have this responsibility in the Congress to call, right there in the Constitution, we have an invasion, and you can't redefine this. These are people coming across our border. This, based on fundamental definition, this is an invasion. We've been under an invasion for over 2 decades, and therefore you must repel this invasion. In other words, you have to close that border, and you have to gather all these people up, because that's what the Constitution tells you to do. And if you don't do this, then we will start removing you. And he could have used the Department of Justice to go in and say, you know, you're failing to do, and remove all of Congress. And it doesn't matter what you, the people, think, folks. There, and what I mean by that is there are way too many people that think that we need to violate and get rid of the Constitution. Sorry. There's no process of doing that other than through an Article 5 convention. We're not going to give that to you. We're not going to surrender this Constitution. And we need a constitutional president to actually protect this. We have 50 million invaders, if not more. We have really no great accounting of it. But if you go to the Center for Immigration Studies, who has actually kind of been keeping track, and I don't even know if they're compromised or not, but at least they have, you know, come to these conclusions of 40 to 50 million. And actually, I will go back to Yale and MIT in 2018. This is even cited in our invasion petition. They claimed at that time there were 21 million invaders based on their study and research. 21 million. How many infantry is in the Russian army? Because I'm telling you, it's not 21 million. They don't have 21 million amassed and going into the Ukraine. We have more than an army host sitting within our borders. And many of these people are combatants, and many of these people are either being trained, being communicated to. The time is coming. Do not think that this is not going to backfire on us if we don't deal with this. I cannot emphasize enough how important it is that we actually get on top of this, and a constitutional president could do this, because bottom line, he needs to convene an emergency session if necessary and demand that Congress do their job in front of everybody. Read the Constitution and tell them, do your job or suffer being removed, because you've taken an oath to support the Constitution and you have been insurrecting against the Constitution, allowing this because you're giving them aid and comfort. Go read Section 3, folks, of the 14th Amendment. It's just that we have failed so badly in holding our public servants accountable that they've placed themselves, them, the judges, our entire system, even our parties, because we give them blind faith. They have placed themselves above the law. It's time we put the law above them. It's time we put the Constitution above all. It is the supreme law. It's not an ideology. It is the law. And it is the declared law. And every citizen by law is obligated to defend and support it against enemies, foreign and domestic. So, as we, you know, move forward, I can't invoke how important having a constitutional president is, which is specifically why we're re-airing on the 11th. I want to have everybody. You're going to want to record this if you don't already pull these things down for yourself. These things will help you understand specifically how important it is. How important it is to have a president who is actually faithfully executing the law. When I say the law, not what the law Congress wants to make, the law of the Constitution. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so one of the things that we talk about, and I've not dove into this because academically it requires, you know, the cases and so forth, but the intent of elevating corporations in America beyond their function within a state, though the globalist intent began in the 1800s. And there were law cases that actually, I believe, was towards the end of the 1800s. And I'll probably put this into an article. But what's important that you understand is that there was a case back in the 1800s that set the precedence that corporations are equal to people. One of the reasons why the 16th Amendment was passed or was basically pushed upon us, I don't think it was actually ratified, but it's not the problem. But what it did was it actually created a direct income tax on the people and or incomes, which was the way that the federal government could start taxing corporations. It wasn't instant, but it became the logical thing that they not only were taxing the people, they began taxing corporations. And it was through these tactics that actually brought, and the federal government was able to actually start ruling and regulating them. This is all unconstitutional. The Department of Labor, all of these things, the Department of Commerce, how they've stepped in and started regulating corporations has been a methodology of recruiting and keeping corporations that would, you know, basically tout the bottom line. I mean, look at Amazon. Amazon was founded in sharing your data, every time you log in, every time you're on Amazon with your login, Amazon gives the CIA, gives the intelligence community, everything you looked at, everything you've purchased, they keep track of everything you're doing, and that's reported. So corporations have absolutely crossed the line and have become agents for the government. And when I say agents for the government, I mean agents for the globalist government. Your local government may not, that data may be available to them if they go to the federal government, but this all was a part of the globalist plan of how they started moving forward in creating the symbiotic relationship, because the corporations were driving us towards globalism so that they could control us. And I hate to sound like the conspiracy theorist, but this is where all the evidence is pointing. So let me go back to this past week, or I believe it's this past week, or at least the past couple of weeks, where it's come out where Boeing has been caught in treasonous behavior by actually transferring technology to China, technology that was barred from being able to be given to China. They knew this. So why is it that the corporations, because this isn't the first time, why is it that corporations are treated like people in one capacity that creates an advantage for government, but they're not treated like people when it seems like the perception is, oh, well, bad, we're going to slap your hands. Because I can tell you that the government probably knew that Boeing had done this for a long time, and now they're finally saying, okay, we got to do something about you, Boeing, because you're killing people, and we've got all these other problems, so we're going to drag you in over the stuff we already know you did, and we're going to spank your hand by taking billions of dollars from you. By the law, by definition, a person that commits treason should be hanged. And what should actually happen when a corporation, I just want you to get this perspective, folks, when a corporation commits treason, it should be scuttled. It should be completely shut down, and actually, the ownership and everything else needs a wholesale change. Everybody gets scrapped, other than, the people that are actually doing the work and so forth that had nothing to do with the decision to give that technology to China. Everybody, the board, every executive that's not a producer in the company, gone. And then whoever wants to come along and buy up that. But let's be clear here. The federal government actually has really no role in this, other than the fact that they committed treason, and they do have jurisdiction over treason. And because the Supreme Court has actually defined a corporation as a person, then I believe that they have the right to hang them. And so maybe we just go out and hang every executive and everybody in the boardrooms of Boeing. But at least they need to be removed, and then Boeing needs to be basically shut down and wait for anyone within that state. I'm telling you, folks, the globalists should not be able to buy, and somebody from another state should not be able to come in and buy your corporation. There's no law in the United States that allows corporations to actually have ownership in one state and then occupy freely across all the state boundaries. I mean, this is exactly what big tech's been doing, and they're not paying their taxes in those states. As a matter of fact, there are many states that are being robbed, and so the only way they feel like they can actually get their taxation share is through sales tax, via Amazon and so forth. I honestly say, what about the revenue that Google makes off of every click? There are all sorts of things we need to go down as far as taxation. That's a different topic altogether. But the bottom line is, corporations have been defined as people. They are being protected by government and just slapped on the wrist for, committing treason. This is unacceptable. I cannot tell you, though, when we look at this whole problem of corporations, and let's go back to that sink and the water, the globalist government is being protected, and your state legislatures have the power to step in and shut all of this water down. Now, I want you to think in that metaphor that corporations and how the federal government has seized control and is regulating and allowing this globalism, unconstitutional globalism, to be operating in America. That's one sink. The invasion, that's another sink. What is another problem? Education, the federal government being involved in the curriculum and the education and the indoctrination of your kids, that's another sink. Going after your guns, the bump stock that Trump did, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's another sink. These petitions that we're doing, your federal lands, all unconstitutional, that's another sink. The chemtrails overhead, the geoengineering with the CO2 pipeline, those are other sinks. Are you really ready to actually clean up, and are you ready to leave the institution? Because you have to shut the water off at the source. And when you realize that you may only have access, what you would perceive, you only have access to the sink faucet. We have access to the actual source of all of the water coming in. And we have to shut that source down. And the only way to do this is Republic Review. Now, I'm telling you right now, because of the petition movement and everything else that we've been doing over the past year and a half, 2 years, and I've been looking, and I'm getting ready to update this. So I'm going to be updating. I'm making this public knowledge. I will be updating the Republic Review bullet process to incorporate how, because if you read Republic Review right now, it basically points to how the state legislatures can just do this. But I believe that, you know, there are other paths, and the only way that I see that we're actually going to get state legislators to do this is to get your county commissioner to do this, and the mechanism of petitions has to be integral to this process. Has to be. As a matter of fact, the right of petition for the redress of grievances is so significant, I just can't emphasize this enough. But we have to really place correct constitutional context to all of this. This is why we've created the connect the dots petition. We have to start with fundamental petitions to say, right here, we've proven that you have to have the enumerated power to do this. This is why we're also doing the Table of Tyranny. This is why I'm busy doing all of this. And you know what's really sad? Is there's organizations out there that have people that would be very good at walking in and helping and actually able to get this stuff done quickly, such as the John Birch Societies, probably such as Tactical Civics. They may need a little bit of, you know, refresher or fine tuning to get, you know, to clear the cobwebs of monarchy or monarchism out of their heads, you know, by this doctrine of magistrates, nullification, those types of things. But I'm just, there's so much further beyond, just the average Joe out there. Now, you people that listen to this show, you're not the average Joe. But getting people to actually help definitize and finalize these documents that we're working is so important. And I'm just saying, the reason why we're not united is because maybe they just can't get past, you know, GR holding them accountable. Hold me accountable. I mean, granted, when I published my first book, I got criticized. I mean, immediately I got criticized. And I go, you know, I didn't even know these things. I had no idea that the John Birch Society and the Convention of State folks were at odds with each other. I actually thought that we all got along. I actually thought that we were just misinformed. No. They hate each other. They're at war with each other. I didn't even know that. I actually didn't even know that till after, because Douglas V. Gibbs, because I said, what's the John Birch Society's problem? He kind of told me. And I didn't even actualize I didn't come to the realization of how at odds they were. You know, it's almost like here's two people, two groups of people that love the Constitution. And let's put the leadership aside. We know that the leadership is corrupt. The top dogs are corrupt and they're being directed by very bad people, probably. And this is an allegation. But the way things are today, folks, I think that this allegation would be proven. I don't have the time to prove it. If you want to, you can. The fact is, I know the people in these organizations, the people on the ground are really good people. And they have allowed themselves to be so hard aligned that they hate each other. I see legislators. I see a legislator up, this woman senator up in Montana that has been, verbally accosted. I mean, they've done lots of things to her, and she strikes back as well. This is the Hatfield-McCoy division here, folks. Forgiveness. I started this whole show off. Forgiveness. We all agree that the federal government is absolutely tyrannical and waging war against us. The reality is their argument on the convention is irrelevant. It does not stop the faucets. It does not turn off the water. We have to arrest and use the necessary measures in shutting down the source. And the convention can't do that. Enforcement and interposition is the only, because you could write an amendment And as soon as you put it up there, that's just as good as all the rest of the Constitution. And I've gone over this, folks. The 10th Amendment suffices. All powers not delegated or reserved from the states are reserved to the states and the people respectively, basically. I'm paraphrasing. But bottom line, the 10th Amendment says it all. What, do you want to reiterate the 10th Amendment? Come on, folks. Let's wake up. And so as there's a few things I need to talk about, but this other thing that is actually coming out, and as a matter of fact, I noticed this advertisement, and there's, I don't know if anybody's out there connecting the dots, but the 5G network is at the point, it's matured enough to where they are now selling, and Verizon is out there saying, drop your cable, sign up with 5G. Get 5G because they believe that they're at an acceptable unreliability. In other words, they believe their product is good enough that you will, you know, drop your cable company and go 5G and sign up with Verizon. And I'm here to tell you folks that this whole, how all these companies are linked, if you look at it, this is a globalist plan. This is a trapping. If you understand the Internet of Things, this new World Wide Web that they want to create, this is the globalist trapping. And who's at the center of this? Who's at the center of 5G? Who's all in and have been putting the satellites up into space? Who's created this train of thousands of satellites that are literally going to create a constant, I mean, it's almost going to look like Saturn at night. You're going to have this long line of dots just going across the horizon. Endless. It'll just go all night when they're done. They're going to have that many satellites in space as a part of this train circling around around the globe. And I'm here to tell you, folks, the reality is Elon Musk is the heart of all of this. He's the one that's implementing this plan. And everybody loves Elon Musk. He's the consummate conservative. Look at, he's defending the First Amendment right. Hold on here, folks. Just because the devil does one good thing, actually, the devil does 9 good things. It's that 10th thing that, you know, will destroy you. What is going on? These are corporations. Anybody that's at the head of the corporation that isn't calling for the completely, you know, the state stepping in and dismantling the federal government's control over all this and basically laying it out that if you're operating in our state, you better be here or we're coming after you with excessive taxes for operating in our state without any presence. This is going to force Google, Facebook, and everybody to start operating in your state, or they're going to start charging you for all the connections, all the, you know, memberships and so forth. If Facebook is making, even though your membership on Facebook is free, the only reason Facebook makes money is because you're a member. In other words, you log in, your membership, this is all reportable of how they have influence over you. That's how they're making money. And so, got to be clear here, folks. Sorry about this. Got to be clear here, folks. When we see these revenues and they're making revenue off of your people, that's a transaction in your state. That is a taxable event. Now, I need to, and I kind of promised I was going to talk about the Electoral College. We need to really look at, and I've got less than 10 minutes left. We need to look at how important the Electoral College is and how important representation is. I cannot emphasize enough. Restoring your representation to 30,000 people, because that's how it is right now, or ratify that First Amendment to make it to 50,000, whatever. You have a right of representation, and Congress has made it so that your representation is completely watered down. You have no voice with your representative today. This has to change, and we need to actually start putting our constitutional caps on, and not our tinfoil caps, the constitutional caps. And we need to actually start looking at what's going on, and And I'll give you a great case in point, because it seems like today Trump is leaning. I mean, the short list of his vice president candidate is going to be Greg Abbott. And I'm telling you, that is playing the popularity test. In other words, Greg Abbott is kind of stopping it. And so that, you know, that's playing really well with conservatives and Republicans. And as a matter of fact, lots of people, independents as well. Even independents look at this invasion as more than just problematic. It needs to be dealt with. And so the Electoral College is the decider. We need to restore the Electoral College so that they will actually choose the president instead of being told by the party who they have to choose. Just go into Article 2 of the Constitution as well as the 10th Amendment. Read the Electoral College clauses. There is nowhere in the Constitution where the president chooses his vice president. In the 12th Amendment, it's clear that the elector on one ballot will determine who should be president. And then on the other ballot, they determine who would be vice president. And whether you like it or not, you can have a Republican president and a Democrat vice president. But hopefully, the outcome is a constitutional president and a constitutional vice president. We've got to peel the party hat off of our heads and say, you know what? This whole problem exists because of what the party's been doing to us. That's why I just went through the past few weeks of giving you the picture of how the party's been colluding. It's all about control. We don't have, as a matter of fact, you think we have a Republican form of government? The Constitution guarantees it. But the parties have actually created a party form of government. Tell me that the weeks that we stood still in Congress because the Republicans twice had a problem of determining the leadership, tell me how Constitution could be shut down because the party has to choose its leadership. As a matter of fact, if we look at how the party has, you know, entrenched itself from the local all the way up to the national level, we have to have the serious conversation, folks. We've got to cut the source off. And it's not just the sink. We've got to actually restore the Constitution and take the party's control away from it out. We got to take it out. So when we talk about the restoration of republicanism, the restoration of republicanism is multifold. It's not just restoring your representation. It's not just restoring the Electoral College. It's equally restoring the bicameral legislative representation in your state. The Supreme. So I published this. It needs to be edited. I apologize, but I think the message is far more important, and I'm hoping you can get past, you know, some of the mistakes that's in there. It's not bad. I mean, for, you know, a person that hasn't been in education for a long time, and I'm getting old and so forth, I think it's very good as far as, you know, its quality and its polishing, but it's academic and it's accurate. Go read the documents that I cite in here. I am actually proving to you how the Supreme Court has actually dismantled your Republican form of government and given you a democracy, which actually bodes very well in supporting more party control. We have so many layers of party control in our government that it's just ridiculous. We have to get rid of the two-party system, and the only way to do that is to actually start taking over the party locally, whether you leave the party altogether like you would leave a church that's preaching apostate doctrine. We need to either leave the party and actually stand up on the Constitution. But bottom line, you know, sometimes it's easier to use the party to get rid of the party. In other words, go into the party, you know, and I've asked the Constitution Party to do this. I'm out here saying this. And so whether it's the Constitution Party that sets the example, or the Republican Party sets the example. I mean, the Wyoming Republican Party is probably the closest party, because actually they're beating the Constitution Party, because the Wyoming Republican Party actually embraces and supports Republic Review. They've got rhinos in the party, and they've got their problems, but they're the farthest along. They're the closest to the top of the mountain. The Wyoming Republican Party is the closest to the top of the mountain. And so if the Constitution Party stripped their platform and actually focused and said Republic Review is the end result of everything that we need to do in taking back the county, taking back the state, and initiating this full accountability of every public servant. It starts at the county level, because Republic Review is about constitutional compliance and restoring our government to reflect the powers delegated and nothing more, to reflect the roles and responsibilities and properties delegated and nothing more. And you know what? Your head's spinning because they're dropping more illegals off. Your head's spinning because they're spraying more chemtrails. Your head's spinning because they're doing more geoengineering. Our heads are spinning. If you want to fight, if you want to fight the tentacle, then enjoy yourself, because it's just like wrestling with a pig. You're never going to fix the problem when you fight the tentacle. You have to go to the source. We have to attack the body of this monster. The only way you bring down the Leviathan is by attacking the body. And that's, I mean, obviously, when you look at all of the movies that where they talk about the Leviathan, the Kraken, what have you, you know, the goal is to drive something into the brain, the heart, whatever, kill the beast. You don't trim the nails on the tentacles. And for the most part, that's really what we're doing. That's what most people are doing. The concept of a conservative, is antithetical to the Constitution. And it drives me bat crap crazy when I hear people say, we need to get more conservatives in. What that means is you need to get the one person that's aligned with the one little thing you're thinking about, and you're not thinking big picture. You're not looking at the source of all of the problems. You're only talking about, you know, the one little sink that may be making part, you know, one thousandth of the mess. I mean, think about it, folks. Look at all the different warfare tactics. Go read my constitutional minutes of the 23rd of January in 2023. Kind of interesting. 2301-23. That was the date of it. But the bottom line, go read that. I place clear context of the economic warfare, the cyber warfare, all of the things that they're conducting. Today in Feedback Friday, I kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the news, but more importantly, we have to really start focusing. We have to start forgiving each other and working together. Working together and focusing on the source, the absolute source of all of our problems. And then when you get that, then I think we're ready to actually take down those at the county, state, and federal level who refuse to fulfill their oath of office. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org
and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.